It's May 24th. You're listening to the Humanist Network News, an audio production of the Institute for Humanist Studies. I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
I ain't afraid of your prey, and I'm afraid of what you do in the name of your God. Rise up to your higher power, free up from...
So you call yourself a humanist. Someone who rejects dogma and instead uses science and reason to understand the natural world. Someone who's compassionate about other human beings. Someone who tolerates the freedom of religion or belief. If that's the case, you probably don't approve of the attempts by the religious right to erode the wall of separation between religion and government, church and state. But how far are you willing to go to work against them? Post a comment on an internet discussion board, call into a radio show, meet with your representative. How about becoming one of them in order to expose their secret agendas before they can hatch? Today we're going to dedicate our entire program to the story of one humanist who spent 4 years embedded with the Christian Coalition. This isn't someone who left the church, a fundamentalist who realized he was a humanist and left the church, no. This is someone who joined the Christian Coalition as a humanist and stayed in for 4 years, all the while working against the culture he was immersed in. After being up to his neck in right-wing culture, society, this humanist, atheist, gained access to men like Ralph Reed, Pat Robertson, and even George H. Bush, who was then the president of the United States. That's right, folks. HNN is going deep undercover. But first, a little public service announcement for all you free thinkers out there. It's summertime. Maybe not here in Albany, New York, where this show is produced, but somewhere in the world, it's summer. And that means it's almost time for Camp Quest, which is a secular summer camp for children of humanists, atheists, and any other stripe of free thinker you can come up with. This year, there are Camp Quest programs in Ohio, Kentucky, Minnesota, Michigan, California, and Ontario, Canada. At least some of the programs still have openings for campers, so be sure to check out camp-quest.org for more information. There may be a few openings for counselors, too, so check it out, especially if you're in college. The Institute for Humanist Studies, through its annual grant fund, is a major financial supporter of Camp Quest. And speaking of the grant fund, you may not be aware that the Institute for Humanist Studies awards more than $100,000 a year in grants to humanist organizations throughout the world. This year's deadline for project applications is September 8th, so check out humaniststudies.org for more information. And while you're jotting things down, don't forget to write down our HNN listener comment phone number, because I know you're going to want to call in about this show. That number is 206-339-4168. I'll be back with you in one moment to begin our feature. That was Shooting Up Jesus by Tycoon Machete off the album Plug and Play Messiah. No, that song isn't about hurting Jesus, at least I don't think so. It's about the folks who get high on Jesus, which ties into our show today. Larry Jones, president of the Institute for Humanist Studies, which he founded in 1999. Probably one of the biggest philanthropists in the humanist community. Larry has served on the boards of the Center for Inquiry and the Committee for Scientific Investigation of the Paranormal. He's the first vice president of the International Humanist and Ethical Union. You might be surprised then to hear that in some circles, Larry Jones is a fully credentialed fundamentalist Christian. You see, it all happened back in 1992 when Jones was serving as executive director of the Capital District Humanist Society, a local humanist group here in Albany, New York. A man named Skip Porteous came to Albany to speak to the group about his work as a watchdog of the religious right. At the time, Porteous worked for the Institute for First Amendment Studies, an organization based in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. A former Pentecostal minister, Porteous walked away from the church to warn others about the dangers of fundamentalism. He also had a background in undercover investigation, which was a great asset to him in his new line of work, especially in writing his monthly publication, Freedom Writer, which reported on the stealthy activities of fundamentalist politicians. Here's Larry Jones.
I hadn't really heard much about the Christian Coalition at that time, so I thought it was a very informing for me to see that this threat was occurring. Mm-hmm. And at the end of Skip Porteous's talk, after informing us about the threat of this political action group, this political arm of the extreme right, he said that he was going to go to a meeting of the state Christian Coalition held in Albany, New York, and due to a schedule problem, he couldn't make it. Mm-hmm. So he asked for a volunteer to go in his stead.
Now, he's speaking to a group of local humanists.
That's right, yeah.
When he is looking for a volunteer, he's looking essentially for an undercover agent or a mole.
Well, at that time, he just wanted somebody to go there and report to him as to what went on at this meeting. This meeting was kind of open to the public. It wasn't really a top secret meeting. Mm-hmm. So I raised my hand, and I did go to the meeting.
That's how you get into trouble, Larry. You know that, right? By raising your hand.
Yes, yes. It started to be just a commitment to go to one meeting. Mm-hmm. Ended up being a commitment for 4 years, submerged in the culture of the religious right, more than I had originally planned. Uh-huh. My motive for doing that was that I was raised in an atheist family. Mm-hmm. And I was curious as to what made these people tick, why they believed in what they believed in. Mm-hmm. And so I thought this was a good opportunity to kind of submerge myself into their culture. And also I felt that after hearing Skip Porteous's talk about the danger of the Christian Coalition to my way of thinking, to my belief systems, mm-hmm. I felt that they were indeed the enemy, and we needed to find out what they were doing.
The Christian Coalition. It was founded in 1989 by former televangelist Pat Robertson after his failed campaign for Republican presidential nomination. At one time, it boasted more than 1,400 chapters and 1.5 million donors and supporters. Its true numbers were probably far fewer. According to its founder, the coalition's mission was to mobilize Christians one precinct at a time, one community at a time, until once again we are the head and not the tail, and at the top rather than the bottom of our political system. In 1995, Robertson predicted that the Christian Coalition will be the most powerful political force in America by the end of this decade. All right, so is Larry overreacting a little when he said he thought the Christian Coalition was the enemy of his humanist worldview? Here's a quote that Robertson made on his talk show, The 700 Club, in 1981. "The Constitution of the United States, for instance, is a marvelous document for self-government by the Christian people. But the minute you turn the document into the hands of non-Christian people and atheistic people, they can use it to destroy the very foundation of our society. And that's what's been happening." In 1990, he said, again on the 700 Club, "The courts are merely a ruse, if you will, for humanist, atheistic educators to beat up on Christians." He accused the group now of telling women they had to become lesbians. He said Planned Parenthood is teaching kids to fornicate, have adultery, commit every kind of bestiality and homosexuality, lesbianism, everything the Bible condemns. In 1991, he alluded to Presbyterians and Methodists as antichrists. Okay, you get the point. After his first meeting, Larry went to Buffalo to attend another gathering of the Christian Coalition State Caucus, this time in western New York, actually not far from where the Center for Inquiry headquarters are located, where at the time Larry was a board member. The purpose of this second meeting was to encourage people to establish new chapters throughout the state.
I met somebody there from Rensselaer County, where I lived. And she was also interested in starting a chapter, so we said, well, let's go for it.
But Larry, I still can't get over this. I mean, how are you talking to these people? Are they praying for you? Are they peace be with the Lord be with you? I mean, how are these people acting at this meeting, and how are you, a second-generation atheist, just walking about them, you know, undetected?
Well, I didn't try to fool them. They would have found me out very quickly. I presented myself as a backslidden, as they say, Christian who had slipped into atheism and was trying to get out of the, you know, meaningless atheism and find Christ again. Mm-hmm. So this really validated their worldview, and they just loved me. and I didn't have to pretend I knew the Bible backwards and forwards, and they accepted me for what I was, and they were trying to help me come back to Christ.
So time passes. Larry founds a local chapter of the Christian Coalition with a woman named Nancy. One of the things he soon finds is that Christians have an enormous advantage when it comes to forming political interest groups. They have a far-reaching social network, the church. Larry and Nancy ask a few ministers to make an announcement in church, and 40 people show up at the first meeting with interest in leadership roles of the Rensselaer County chapter of the Christian Coalition. They whittle the candidates down, select their board members, and they're up and running. This is deep cover here, Larry. This is a big commitment. You're with this woman in Rensselaer County. You're talking about starting a chapter. I assume that you had to start, you know, building a whole cover, almost an alter ego, another Larry Jones. A Christian Larry Jones. How did you go about, you know, doing that?
Well, again, I never tried to fool them in terms of my knowledge of Christianity or my familiarity with the Bible. Mm-hmm. So it was rather easy. Mm-hmm. While I was doing this, I was also on the board of the Capital District Humanist Society. So you're right, I had a rather split life.
Yeah. Well, I imagine, though, that so you've told them you're an atheist, but you're interested in finding Jesus again. I imagine that they're going to want you to attend church services and go to Bible studies.
Well, you know, about the third question Christians ask you after your name and where you live is, what church do you belong to? Mm-hmm. So I quickly realized I better belong to a church if I'm going to continue this. So I joined a local church called Christ Church. Uh-huh. Not very imaginative, but that was the name. Uh-huh. And
where was this church? Was this church located in Rensselaer County, where you're starting a chapter, or is it?
No, it was in Albany. Uh-huh.
On the other
in
side
Colony,
of the,
I believe, yeah.
On the other side of the river.
Other side of the river. I didn't want to run into the chapter members I was dealing with in mm-hmm. church, especially, but. I felt it was necessary to belong to a church.
So now you're going to church every Sunday.
Yeah, well, almost. Sometimes I skipped.
Sunday is also the day that the Humanist Society meets, right? At least once a month they meet on a Sunday.
Yeah. But the church always met in the morning, mm-hmm. and the Capital District Humanist Society met in the afternoon. So. Mm-hmm.
So as this is going on, and as you're getting involved in the church, I mean, are you meeting friendly people? Are you making friends? How are you dealing with the social side of things?
Well, they're very friendly to me, and certainly I socialized with them. But I knew that I needed an exit strategy, so I didn't want to complicate it with personal relationships.
And were you getting a lot of invitations from, say, single women? Churches are a place where people, you know, meet.
That's
other...
right. It's a social gathering place and a dating place too. Mm-hmm. And I got invitations to go to Bible study courses and things like that. And I went to a few. Mm-hmm. I found the service at this church, very uplifting. They had a live band, and they played, they weren't hymns. They were kind of modern music. Everything was upbeat. Mm-hmm. And they even had a little theater group there that played out biblical vignettes. So it was interesting.
Mm-hmm. And you're kind of approaching this from an anthropological stance, I think. It's very scientific. I assume you're sort of learning prayers and learning how the culture behaves and learning things to say. Is that right?
Well, I found it necessary to memorize a few prayers because
you're now the leader of a chapter,
yes,
of the Christian Coalition,
and it would become occasionally my turn to lead in prayer. Mm-hmm. So I just have a simple thing. It wasn't much of a problem.
Evangelicals strive for salvation in the name of Jesus Christ. Suffer and wait for divine intervention. God bless your union of two loving hearts. Even I long for a partner, but I suffer and wait for divine intervention never comes. Well, I'm lucky for the things.
This is August Berkshire, Vice President of Atheist Alliance International, and you're listening to Humanist Network News.
And I'm your host, Duncan Crary. That was Evangelics by Tyler Riggs off the album Bedrooms Are for Singing. We're listening to the story of how Larry Jones, secular philanthropist and president of the Institute for Humanist Studies, spent 4 years observing the Christian Coalition from the inside. Larry was a volunteer informant for the Institute for First Amendment Studies, a watchdog organization working to oppose the religious right. So Larry's local chapter of the Christian Coalition is holding their general meetings once a month in a church in Troy. They book a lineup of speakers, and they start publishing a monthly newsletter. And it looks surprisingly like the Capital District Humanist Society newsletter format.
Well, I did copy the format. It seemed a good format to copy.
Mm-hmm. So Larry's now the editor of the Capital Christian News, with a format lifted directly from the local humanist publication. If you compare issues of the two newsletters, they're like the yin and the yang. The articles in the Christian newsletter blame liberal society for the Menendez brothers who murdered their parents for money, Lorena Bobbitt who cut off her cheating husband's penis for not giving her an orgasm. There's a report from the state branch of the Christian Coalition announcing a new legislative affairs office. And then there's an article about a recent talk given by one Skip Porteous of the Institute for First Amendment Studies, a talk given to a coalition of gay and lesbian groups, along with an assortment of other left-wing organizations. The article, which has no byline, details Porteous's talk on the dangers of the Christian Coalition. It ends with an editorial call to action. CCN, that's the Capital Christian News, feels that the state and national Christian Coalition offices should put forth a more concerted effort to counteract such blatant anti-Christian, anti-family propaganda. You can find a similar article with the opposite call to action in the monthly newsletter of the Capital District Humanist Society. That was the same talk, by the way, that first inspired Larry to investigate the religious right. One thing the Christian newsletter has that the humanist letter does not is ads. How frequently did it come out, and what was the subscription
rate?
Well,
it was a monthly, and we eventually had about 700 subscribers. Uh-huh. And we even sold ad space in it. Uh-huh. To raise some money for it.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at it right now. You have two ads on this issue I'm holding. One is Jeans Septic Service, so a septic service ad. The other one is a business machine ad. So you're going around hitting the pavement, Larry, selling ads for...
Well, one of these was a board member, the one who owned the septic company.
Uh-huh. Oh, that was a board member.
Sewer company,
okay.
Yeah, he was a board member. And just kind of word of mouth, we got the idea out that we needed, we could sell space, ad space in this.
So when you're selling ad space there, are you telling these people, you know, about the militant gay agenda? I mean, do they know who they're buying an ad from? Obviously, one is a board member, but, you know, did you have to do this whole spiel about the secular humanists taking over the country?
Well, they were the people who bought ads were usually people who came to meetings, so they knew something about
us.
I don't recall really calling people up and trying to sell this, but
I'm still loving the septic service ad here on the Christian Coalition. It's got a biblical passage. It says Isaiah 5:20-24. Which I thought maybe that might be a biblical passage.
Did you look that up? You were going.
I thought it might have something to do with, you know, the septic business, human excrement or whatever. I did find it. It's
well, their slogan was, "We're the number one in the number two business."
All right. Well, yeah. This passage is when people give up the word of God, they get everything mixed up, but they don't realize it. He cannot bless us if we are disobedient to his word.
Okay.
So, kind of fitting, seeing as he bought this ad from an atheist. You know, how are you choosing what gets into the newsletter? For example, if you get this really, you know, far out screed against, you know, the militant homosexual, you know, maybe a normal editor might say, that wouldn't be good PR for...
Yeah, my policy was the crazier the better. If I was really concerned, I would have edited a lot of this stuff. But
right now, you may be wondering if Larry's doing more harm than good by leading a local chapter of the Christian Coalition. I mean, it's kind of funny for an atheist to be publishing a Christian newsletter, but why help spread the word that you don't agree with? Well, one of the problems combating the Christian Coalition is that, one, it's active at all levels of government, and two, its members don't always make their true sentiments known until after they become elected. Sometimes they don't reveal their agenda until they have enough members in office to back them up. Porteous was particularly interested in exposing stealth Christian Coalition candidates for school board elections, candidates who, once elected, would eliminate comprehensive sex education and teaching acceptance of gays and lesbians, for example. Larry now had access to people, names, subscribers of his newsletter, and Porteous could cross-check those names with candidates for school boards. Once Porteous found a match, he could out the religious right before it had a chance to take hold. Maybe all this sneaking around sounds underhanded, but the other side was doing it too. Nancy, who founded the local chapter of the Christian Coalition with Larry, did a little sleuthing of her own by attending a seminar at an all-girls boarding school. The seminar was led by members of the local Planned Parenthood, or what Nancy described in a newsletter article as a gay and lesbian task force. Their aim was to help educators create a safe environment for gays and lesbians. There was also a call to increase HIV/AIDS prevention. Nancy was appalled.
This activity, women holding hands and such, she was basically very naive.
Mm-hmm.
So she was quite shocked by what she heard and saw at this meeting.
Well, I see one of the goals of the meeting was to talk about trying to promote more positive, trying to stop gay bashing society and trying to promote more positive gay role models. And one of the ideas they even discussed was, you know, television programs who could have role models who are gay, which I find, you know, interesting
today. This was abhorrent to the Christian right.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the gay and lesbian movement was to them a threat to family values.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, family values was the core of their social structure.
Right.
Family values as they define them.
Mm-hmm. By the time Larry had embedded himself, the Christian Coalition had already demonstrated its sway with elections. Their most effective tool was voter guides, which graded candidates according to fundamentalist Christian values. In 1990, when Senator Jesse Helms was behind in the polls, he called Pat Robertson. On the Sunday before the Tuesday election, the North Carolina Christian Coalition distributed 750,000 voter guides through church bulletins and church parking lots on behalf of Helms. Helms won re-election by a narrow margin. Larry's group was also distributing voter guides, and one of the best places to distribute his literature, again, was at churches. IRS tax regulations require churches to be nonpartisan.
In fact, many pastors refuse to distribute these voter guides for fear that they would lose their 501c3 religious status.
Mm-hmm. The coalition claimed that its voter guides were nonpartisan and assured worried ministers that it was bound to the same IRS regulations as they. The truth is that the coalition only had a provisional tax-exempt status. When the IRS finally made its ruling, it revoked the nonprofit status of the coalition. At issue were the voter guides, which left no question as to which candidates the group endorsed and contained unfair language about those it opposed. But that's jumping ahead a little bit.
Pat Robertson put on these Road to Victory conferences annually, and I was invited to go. I built up my credentials as a loyal local chapter leader. And these were quite interesting meetings. They're politically charged. They had people like Ollie North as speakers, and
right.
And Skip Porteous, whom I now worked for, I mean voluntarily, of course,
mm-hmm.
Wanted to get as much information out of these meetings as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of amusing at these we'd have the State Caucus of New York, where all the state representatives would meet privately, and you could always tell the undercover people when the when prayers were going on, because everyone else was bowing their heads, and the undercover folks would then, with hand signals, communicate with each other.
And how many other agents were there?
Oh, a few, not many.
And did you have meetings with these other secret agents?
Well, Skip Porteous had, he was really becoming a spy master. He had two other undercover people there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we met in Virginia, where Pat Robertson's complex is.
Mm-hmm.
He held these Road to Victory meetings at his four-star hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really impressed when I went into this hotel. There was a long hallway in the front of the, running down the whole front of the hotel. It was called the Founders Inn.
Mm-hmm.
And on the wall in this hallway were portraits of the founding fathers. And right there amongst them was Pat Robertson.
Shows you what he thinks about himself.
Yes, this was amazing.
Uh-huh.
I was kind of looked upon as the new kid on the block. They were telling me what I should do and what I shouldn't do.
What you should look for, yeah.
Yeah. But I really impressed them with one of my exploits here. I was waiting to go into a meeting room, and it was just after lunch, and I was waiting for the afternoon session to begin.
Mm-hmm.
And the staff was cleaning up, and a staff member came out, opened the door, and he was holding somebody's name tag. And he said, "Anybody know this person?" And I was right in front, so I said, "Yeah, I know him. I'll make sure he gets it." So I put it in my pocket, and I essentially forgot all about it.
Mm-hmm.
Later that afternoon, I noticed a crowd had gathered in the parking lot, and I went over and asked somebody, "Well, what's going on here?" And he told me, "We're going to meet the president." And at that point, I wasn't sure which president we were going to meet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then asked further questions, and they were going to meet President George Bush, who was running for re-election then.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a reward to Pat Robertson's inner circle, and this wasn't even listed in the program. This was not broadcast at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, this will be interesting to go to and attend. There was a row of these little buses, we used to call them jitney buses. They take about 10 or 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
So I climbed on at one of these jitney buses, and I felt an arm on my shoulder pulling me back. And the attendant there said, "Sorry, you can't go." And I said, "Oh, why?" He said, "Well, you don't have a red dot on your name tag." So I thought, "Oh, well," I gave it a good try. So I was walking back to the inn, and I said, "Wait a minute. I got a name tag in my pocket." And I pulled it out slowly and looked at it, and there was a big red dot on it. So I went into the men's room as Larry Jones and came out as this guy, I forget his name. And I went back out and, of course, went down to the next jitney. I didn't want to get on the same one.
Right.
And got on without any problem. We went to Pat Robertson's mansion, which was just a few hundred yards away. And we were electronically searched and then ushered into Pat Robertson's big rose garden, which was at one end was his mansion, at the other end was this swan pond with black swans swimming around. So immediately I knew I had a problem. I was wearing somebody else's name tag, and I could be identified.
I mean,
they would. I mean, somebody might recognize the name on my.
Well, you would think that if you're in the inner circle, that maybe the people in the inner circle know
each
other. So
immediately, I knew I had a problem. So I went around to the back of the swan pond and put my own name back on, with no red dot. So I figured, well, the worst that could happen is they kick me out, say you don't belong here. But if I was impersonating somebody else, it would be a bigger problem. So nobody challenged me, and I was got talking with people, and I found out this was Pat Robertson's inner circle, his major supporters. Each person there had given at least $10,000 to Pat Robertson's empire. And as a reward, he was bringing George Bush to meet them. And it shows you the power of the Christian Coalition then, because Pat Robertson essentially summoned George Bush to come and meet his supporters. And I guess George Bush was falling behind in the polls, so he was desperate. He was he would go anywhere for votes. So we were. It was a pleasant party out there in the Rose Garden. And we were waiting for the president to come out. I noticed that on Pat Robertson's rooftop, there were Secret Service men setting up rifles. And I thought, wow, if somebody makes the wrong move, these guys are just going to mow everybody down. It was a little scary. But finally, George Bush comes out with Pat Robertson, and I kind of elbowed my way to the front of the semicircle. When you're undercover, you're essentially an actor. You do things you wouldn't normally do, because I'm basically shy, and I wouldn't push myself forward like that. But here I am.
You've really assumed acting.
Yes. It allows you to do things you wouldn't normally do. So.
And you don't even have a red dot on your name tag.
No, I have not. But it's getting dark, you know. It's getting dusk, so nobody could really notice. So Pat Robertson started introducing the president to his supporters, his inner circle. And Pat Robertson eventually came to me. And he looked at me, and he didn't recognize me, of course. And there was an awkward moment. And then he went by and started talking to the person next to me.
He just skipped over you.
Yeah, skipped me. But then I was standing in front of the president, and it was an awkward moment. George Bush finally said, "Well, nice to see you here," and held out his hand. I said, "Nice to meet you, Mr. President." And so it went. He went around and introduced George to all his people. It must have been maybe 40 people there.
And I can't believe this. So, I mean, I assume that Robertson must have been coached by, you know, he's got a PR person who probably coached him on everyone's background and name. And What is he thinking right now? I mean, you got service.
It was a blank. You went, oh, I don't know this person. So then you went on to the next one.
I'm surprised you didn't get a walkie-talkie up to the Secret Serviceman on the roof to take you out right
well,
there.
Well, I was wondering, but he just went by, and there I was with the president in front of me. And he said, nice to see you here.
Uh-huh.
Of course, then we went back, and when I told my fellow undercover guys that I'd done this, it was a real coup. They kind of dropped their jaw. How did you get this? Get into the
you've got some
circle.
Real credentials among many circles now.
Yeah.
Up till this point, you've been listening to Larry describe how he found himself deeper and deeper behind enemy lines. But to truly appreciate this story, you got to know something about Larry. He's a funny guy who's easy to get a laugh out of. He's also an unassuming man who gets along fine with the highfalutin and the downtrodden. It's just that Larry seems to be more comfortable among regular folks. If you were to walk into the Institute for Humanist Studies and see him standing in this beautiful historic office building, you'd probably assume he was there doing maintenance or delivering water for the cooler or inspecting the fire alarm. Larry's humble. He's what you might call a ragged-trousered philanthropist, the kind of guy who gives his money to the cause, not his wardrobe. He wears a plaid shirt, jeans, and a grizzled beard. That's Larry. And when you walk into his office at the Institute, which is the most modest of all the offices, there's a photograph of Larry shaking Pat Robertson's hand, wearing exactly what he always wears.
By the way, you're wearing a like a plaid, like a flannel shirt.
I know. I look very underdressed, and he's very Pat Robertson's a very handsome man, and he's all fully, formally dressed almost. He's got a.
How are the other red circle people dressed for this?
Well, this wasn't at the that.
Oh, that
event.
Was at a different
time. Some.
Okay.
It was either later on in that meeting or at another Road to Victory.
Did he recognize you, Larry? Did he see you again and recognize you?
No,
he didn't.
No. He had too many supporters to. I'm sure he felt that I was someone he should know, but he, went on to the next one.
Oh, man.
That was Jehovah by Jacques Grant and Rewired off the album Here I Am Worship. You're listening to the Humanist Network News. I'm your host, Duncan Crary, and I'm taking you through the journey of one humanist who went undercover with the Christian Coalition for 4 years. After meeting Pat Robertson and the President of the United States, it might seem that Larry had climbed about as high up the ladder as he was going to get in the religious right. Nothing left to see. But then he received a special invitation to a top-secret meeting. One of the earliest groups to start opposing gay rights at the grassroots level was the Colorado for Family Values. Colorado for Family Values gained the attention of the national Christian organizations when it succeeded in passing Colorado's Amendment 2, which denied equal protection for gays and lesbians. It was the only statewide anti-gay rights measure to be approved by voters. It was also struck down by the Colorado courts as unconstitutional. But the accomplishment gained the attention of the national Christian organizations nonetheless. And in 1994, leaders from the religious right convened in Colorado to learn from CFV.
So they organized this meeting, and it was really quite a top-secret meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I'd established my credentials. I was known by Ralph Reed, and I'd met Pat Robertson. And
the president.
And the president, but that didn't help me. So I had the credentials to be invited to this
Who were they looking to invite to this event? Who was invited?
Well, national leaders and state leaders, not only the Christian Coalition, but many different organizations.
All right-wing religious
groups.
Yes. Now, these are the people. These aren't necessarily the kinds of people that we would recognize their names. They're more like the behind-the-scenes power brokers.
That's right.
Right.
There were no celebrities there, but these people were important in the movement.
Right.
And, of course, I didn't consider myself important in the movement, but they did invite local chapter leaders of the Christian Coalition mm-hmm. as well. But some of these people were heads of other national organizations. Mm-hmm. So the press was banned. It was top secret. And I was picked up at the airport in Colorado Springs and taken to this beautiful estate, this castle.
The castle was Glen Area, rather impressive 19th-century home. The Navigators, an international Christian parachurch, purchased the castle to use as a conference center. And what did Skip Porteous think of this? What was he telling
you? Oh, he was ecstatic because he had a scoop. There was no press. Nobody from the press there. Mm-hmm. And so Skip was the only one who could write about it.
This is what
from my witnessing what went on there.
This is what he's been after all along, right? I mean, this is sort of the big payoff. I mean, this is why he was asked, why he approached in the first place, right? Or he probably never dreamed of this, but...
Yeah, I think he was quite ecstatic that I was able to get into this mm-hmm. meeting.
So, Larry, it's 1994. You've been at this for a while. I have a feeling that I'm a backslidden Christian, story is not going to cut it at this point. So you've got to really be... I mean, are you nervous that you're going to be able to play this off, that you might slip?
I had to be careful what I said, especially at this meeting. I didn't want to be found out. I don't think they'd throw me in the dungeon, but if they found out I was I didn't belong there, they'd probably throw me out in the street. Mm-hmm. And, often talking with fundamentalist Christians, you think, well, they're perfectly normal people. They talk about the weather and they talk about interesting things. But there's always the presence, that third presence there, God.
Yeah.
And it's always kind of shocked me back to reality when they would pray or something or mention God, because just a normal conversation, I begin to think, oh, I'm just with a normal person.
Yeah, I would think you might even... get relaxed and comfortable enough that you might slip and say something liberal, or humanist. Even,
well, occasionally I would, but it wasn't a disaster ever. Uh-huh. For instance, I might start eating without before grace or something like
well,
that.
Well, yeah, exactly. What about?
Have to put down my fork and look around.
And would. When you were sort of having a, when you were just relaxing or, spending some time with some of the guests there, I mean, would people ever just spontaneously start praying or ask you to pray with them or anything like that?
Yeah, they form prayer circles and things like this. And mm-hmm. So you had to be ready to lead those things, too, because they just ask, well, Brother Jones, will you lead us in prayer?
So did you come prepared? I mean, were you cramming the night before the test?
Well, not cramming, but I could say a short prayer if I had to.
Uh-huh. Can you remember any of those?
No, it was silly.
When it was all over, the top-secret meeting was relatively uneventful after all. The Colorado for Family Values shared its strategy, presented some videos, and the guests were charged with spreading the anti-gay message. Larry was able to verify for Porteous the attendance of one Kansas state representative, Darlene Cornfield, who denied being there to the press. An exclusive article about the conference ran in the August 1994 edition of The Freedom Writer, the monthly publication of the Institute for First Amendment Studies. Around this time, 1994, the influence of the Christian Coalition began to wane. While the National Coalition was losing steam, so too was the Rensselaer County chapter, which Larry helped found. The church that had been allowing Larry's chapter to meet there wanted to start its own chapter of the Christian Coalition, and it started publishing its own newsletter twice a month, more frequently than the Capital Christian News, with more articles, more writers, more resources.
I really wanted to get out of it at this time. I'd been in long enough.
Years.
Yeah, about 3.5 years or so.
Uh-huh.
And it got to the point where it was becoming obvious that I didn't invite people over to my house. And, to do that, I didn't want to have to hang crucifixes or pictures of Jesus on my walls. My partner would have left me, I think, if I did that. That would have been going too far.
So you were feeling feeling this social obligation or this pressure. You've known these people for years now.
Sure. Yes.
And you've never invited them to your house.
No, I always kind of avoided it.
Are they bringing it up? Are they mentioning
it? Well,
I
mean, not overtly, but it was there. It was kind of my turn to have the board come to my house, meet at my house. But as I say, I took advantage of demise or slow demise of this chapter that I started or helped start. And I did nothing to help it out because I wanted it to end so I could make a clean break and get out of it.
So you're actually rooting for this rival group in Rensselaer County that's starting up their own.
It was not only this rival group, but the chapter itself was losing members and
do these? I mean, but you know, this is a small area. I mean, it's not like we're living in this huge city. Do you ever? I imagine you might run into these people, you know, eating dinner or going to a movie or at the store.
I never have, to the extent where I had to say hello to them or they said hello to me. So it was really a clean break. I disappeared into the mist, so to speak.
I still can't believe that. I mean, you've been all over. You founded this international.
Well, I helped found it. I wasn't the president.
No, I mean, you. But you also, the other Larry Jones here, founded this Institute for Humanist Studies right here in Albany, New York. I mean, we're in the newspaper frequently.
That's right.
Your picture has been in the paper a number of
times. Well, I've always wondered if anybody, any of my old friends saw me there. And I guess they figured I backslid into atheism again or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, this is quite a tale of espionage here, because you're observing the Christian right, but also you know, Nancy at one time was doing some sleuthing to observe the liberal left at Emma Willard. It seems like everybody is trying to sneak around and see how the other side works. Do you ever have any ethical sort of issues
As I may have mentioned earlier, I did this essentially for two reasons. I was first brought up in an atheist family, and so I wanted to kind of put myself into this culture to see, well, how they thought, what their outlook was, why did they believe what they believe, and what their outlook was on the world. And also, I considered them an enemy to my way of life, because they certainly were trying to marginalize people like me push their own agenda into the political arena. And many of the real extremists were trying to create a theocracy. So I felt we really need to know what these people are thinking and doing. And so when Skip Porteous said, well, go for it, find out, and I'll do the rest. I'll expose, you know, the stealth candidates and others. So I don't think it's unethical.
Well, I guess, you know, we as a society, we have undercover police officers. I mean, that's one of the ways
I think espionage is a time-honored profession, really. Of course, nobody knows who you are until you're retired, essentially.
So, Larry, what did you learn from the whole experience? I mean, did you take any of the things that you saw there? Because you founded the Institute for Humanist Studies in 1999, a few years after this project came to a close. Was any of that in your mind when you founded this organization?
I was really impressed with their organizational skills and their single-mindedness in the pursuit of their goals. They're really dedicated. They believe in what they're doing, mm-hmm. and they go for it in a fully committed way. The purpose of it was to influence the political process in the United States, mm-hmm. and ultimately to take over the Republican Party, which they pretty much succeeded in doing. Mm-hmm. And we're living today with the consequences of that success. Mm-hmm. So I felt that you know, humanism needed an organization that was professional and had programs that could kind of counteract this threat from the religious right. So that certainly was a motivation for me to start the Institute for Humanist Studies.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to contact Pat Robertson?
No.
Again?
No.
Should we send him a copy of this program?
He might be amused. I don't know. Ralph Reed might remember me. I don't know. I was on a first name basis with Ralph for a while there.
Mm-hmm. Go to war for religion, America's sin and our tragedy. Last me is Armageddon. I'm still a sinner, sinning. God still a forgiver, forgiving. Can I make a living even if I listen to what the preacher's preaching? God, when you finish with me, what will I be? Only time will tell where I dwell. If I stood up, fell, I'm on my body limits within. You say I'm not a Christian. What are you really saying? Is it that I'm not like you? True, I don't judge like you. I talk a lot like you. If I die, I ain't got an answer to you. The ignorance keeps you a fool. I boast the law. The same God, my rhymes are saying except for Africans, kidnapped by Christians, except they would be slaves. The slaves were allowed to be raped. They say we ain't people, just animals, and our land equals too much capital. I got your capital.
That was Christians by Attic off the album Rise to Power. In 1999, with dwindling membership, mounting debts, and waning political influence, the Christian Coalition officially lost its tax-exempt status after a protracted legal battle. It divided into two parts, the Christian Coalition International, its taxable political arm, and the Christian Coalition of America, tax-exempt and concentrating on voter education. Pat Robertson resigned as the group's president in 2001. In the same year, the Institute for First Amendment Studies ceased operation. Skip Porteous now works in New York City as a private investigator. You can read more about the history of the Institute for First Amendment Studies and back issues of its publication Freedom Writer at www.publiceye.org/IFAS. You've been listening to the Humanist Network News, an audio production of the Institute for Humanist Studies. A transcript of last month's podcast is now available at humanistnetworknews.org, homepage of the weekly Humanist Network News e-zine. We'll publish the transcript for this show next month. To leave a listener comment for possible inclusion in the next Humanist Network News podcast, call 206-339-4168. Use of our theme song, I Am Afraid, was generously donated to the Institute by singer-songwriter Holly Near. To hear more of Near's music, visit hollynear.com. All the other music on our show was made available through podsafeaudio.com and used by permission of the artists through a Creative Commons license. I'm your host, Duncan Crane. Thanks for listening. I ain't afraid.
Of your teachers, I'm afraid of.